This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information, brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association, found on the web at www.nysta.org. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and the following are observations and recommendations for the week of May 21st, 2012. The moisture over the last few weeks and this coming week has begun to light up the disease risk forecast. In fact, most of the region will be high risk for dollar spot and foliar anthracnose, and in the New York City metro area and south, there's high risk for brown patch, likely the result of warm, wet weather and persistent warm nights. Any areas that have marginal growing environments with limited light and poor air movement, I would expect to be under severe pressure. The warm, wet weather has really brought on the spring surge of growth. There are two sides to this issue. One, if you have dense turf that's growing well, then do all you can to avoid adding additional fertilizer at this time. And two, if you have thin turf and recently seeded turf, then a light fertilization at this time will aid in filling bare spots that will prevent weeds from colonizing the area. Consider increasing your mowing frequency at this time to keep pace with clipping accumulation. Remember, there's no reason to remove clippings unless severe clumping will occur. The warm weather and nice weekends means many will make herbicide applications, and if a volatile form, the ester form, is used, be mindful of the potential for off-site vapor drift that could injure ornamentals and new transplants. Most have made their first larvicide application for annual bluegrass weevil, and there are thoughts that good growing conditions may mitigate normal first-generation damage. And in this issue, there's an excellent discussion with Professor Doug Soldat from UW-Madison on his organic lawn research. For the weather, 7 out of the first 10 weeks of this season have been above normal, and this week's 3 above normal was no exception. Degree day accumulations are still ahead of normal by 2 weeks or more, depending on where in the region you are. Most are still about 3 to 7 days ahead of last year's heat. Soils are in the mid-60s throughout the region. Another strong west-to-east gradient for moisture, with areas west of I-81 on the dry side with less than a half an inch, and to the east of I-81 with 1 to 2 inches. New Jersey and south between a half an inch and 1 inch, and coastal Massachusetts 2 to 3 inches. Evapotranspiration was high at 3/4 of an inch to 1 inch, water lost. About 15% of the northeast, mostly along the coast, remains in the moderate drought range. It's still good timing for broadleaf weed control with amine and ester formulations. However, watch for high temps, as ester forms can result in vapor drift and injury to adjacent ornamentals and veggie transplants. Many disease risks are high this week with moisture and warm weather. And the forecast is calling for we're entering a warm period at 5 to 6 above normal temp and temps in the 80 to 90 degree range and lows in the 50s and 60s. There should be some spotty rainfall in the early part of the week, and then expect extended dry conditions. The Cornell Cooperative Extension update begins with Walt Nelson's Western New York report. Sports play and grass recovery competition continues. Home lawn management topics include small mammals, crane flies, zoysia grass, and broadleaf weeds. Culture information relating to overseeding and presence of a pre-emergent herbicide, lawn and establishment guidance. The Adirondack report from Emily Selick and Lynn Wilson. Some grub questions from the lawn front. And ryegrass is finally starting to germinate. Annual bluegrass is improving, looking healthier every day. The old native fescue started to green and grow. Still no sign of annual bluegrass weevil, but we did treat this week, taking advantage of the rain. And some June beetles are around the greens. The Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalsik. Growing conditions for turf have been good again over the last week. Most areas in Eastern Long Island received about 2 inches of rain this week. Even with the adequate rainfall, I still see plenty of irrigation systems running. The Cornell Cooperative Extension Suffolk Diagnostic Lab started to receive inquiries this week on red thread. I tested the soil pH from one of the red thread samples, and it was 5.5. The lab is also receiving many inquiries regarding anthracnose on sycamore trees. The rainfall over the past few weeks as new leaves were growing created a good environment for this common foliage disease on this host. And the Westchester report from Rick Harper and Jerry Giordano. The dry start to spring precluded grass seed germination until well into April, early May, and questions have continued from the consumer front regarding lawn establishment. Commercial turf care professionals have reported a lot of red thread in home lawns and an inordinate amount of maple seedlings germinating in lawns. The regional update begins with the diagnostic report from our friend Rich Buckley at Rutgers University. Brown ring patch still remains the most common diagnosis among samples from putting greens. Frank Wong, former disease turf disease specialist at the University of California, Davis, did extensive work with the disease during his tenure there. His work suggests polyoxin D, sold as Endorse, as a quick-acting fungicide suppressant, and the best long-term control was achieved with the newer DMI fungicides triticonazole and metaconazole. He also suggests that some additional nitrogen fertilization is beneficial on brown ring patch infected sites. Anthracnose basal crown rot is always an early season concern. Small dime-sized spots of yellow turf that represent individual infected plants will start to die during warm periods. We often think of the early manifestation of the disease as an overwintering infection and not an active disease outbreak. However, the samples coming in now are the real deal. Several of our submitters report significant damage to their greens already. I think the early manifestation of the disease is strongly related to the premature warmth and dry conditions this spring. Superintendents that let it dry down too far or push too fast may pay a real price this season. Other diseases of note this period include rust on Kentucky bluegrass, dollar spot on Bancrest Fairway from North Jersey, pink snow mold from upstate New York, take all from a golf course in Virginia, and on our turf farm, a new crop of annual bluegrass weevil adults. Practical organic management advice from Professor Doug Soldat at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We investigated several cool season turf species for tolerance of various mowing heights and fertilization programs over a three-year period. Grasses were established in 2007 and data collected through 2010 in spring, summer, and fall and evaluated under three mowing heights, 1.5, 2.5, 3.5, and three nitrogen fertilizer regimes, 0, 2, or 4 pounds of N per thousand. Long grasses include Kingfisher Kentucky Bluegrass, Ken Blue Kentucky Bluegrass. Kingfisher is an elite type Kentucky Bluegrass. Ken Blue is a common type. Victory 2 Chewings Fescue, Grande 2 Tall Fescue, and Jiffy 2 Perennial Ryegrass. Plots were irrigated at 80% of potential evapotranspiration weekly. The results across mowing height, Grande 2 Tall Fescue consistently had the greatest mean visual quality in each of the study years. Mowing at the lowest height resulted in the lowest mean visual quality. In summer, however, mowing height effects on quality were more valuable in spring and fall. The non-fertilized treatment had the lowest quality for each rating season. The 2 and 4-pound rates were statistically similar in spring. However, the 4-pound in summer had the greatest turf quality. Nitrogen-affected weed pressure. The non-fertilized treatment had the greatest weed pressure of 29% in 2009 and 10. However, not different in the 2-pound rate in 2009. Grande 2 Tall Fescue had the lowest weed pressure of 6% in 2009 and 12% in 2010. Ken Blue consistently had the greatest weed encroachment of 31% in 2009, 28% in 2010. However, Jiffy Perennial Ryegrass and Victory Chewings Fescue in 2010 had the same degree of weed pressure. Weeds were more present in the lowest mowing height, 31% in 2009, 38% in 2010. Generally, higher mowing heights and greater nitrogen rates reduce weed pressure and increase quality. However, Grande 2 Tall Fescue had the lowest weed pressure in 2009 and 2010 and greatest quality in spring, summer, and fall in 2008 through 2010, suggesting this might be an underutilized grass species in cool season areas. Fact sheets of this research are available at the Cornell Turfgrass website. And my Gazing in the Grass update talks this week about soil acidification. The incidence of take-all patch increases substantially when the pH of soil immediately surrounding turf grass roots increases above 5.5. With the predominant form of nitrogen being taken up by the grasses in the form of ammonium ions, the pH of soil surrounding the roots is typically about 1/2 pH unit lower than the bulk of the soil pH. Thus, when we're really concerned with a soil pH value above 6, this is the ideal goal when using soil pH modification as a control measure for take-all patch. In reality, any significant reduction in soil pH values below about 6.5 will aid in control of the disease. Soil acidification requires two things. First, we have to introduce hydrogen ions or substances from which the ions can be produced through microbial action. Secondly, we need to reduce the levels of dominant exchangeable cations, calcium and magnesium, by way of leaching. The presence of divalent anions, such as sulfate, hastens the leaching process. On a pound-for-pound basis, elemental sulfur has considerably more acidifying capacity than does ammonium sulfate fertilizer. But the advantages of using ammonium sulfate are numerous. The reaction time is much shorter, there's much less soil-to-soil variability in terms of microbial action required, and the acidifying action extends more rapidly into the soil. If you have hard water, soil acidification is virtually an unending process. Even after you've achieved the soil pH you want, you're going to find it necessary to apply an acidifying agent once or twice annually to repeat the process every few years. If your soil pH is at or above 8.3, your soil likely contains calcium carbonate. To reduce the pH of such soils, the carbonate must first be destroyed by reaction with hydrogen ions. To illustrate what this means, let me use the example of a green constructed with sand containing 2% calcium carbonate. In order to acidify this green to a 2-inch depth, you would first have to apply a minimum of 93 pounds of sulfur per thousand before the pH would begin to decline throughout this 2-inch depth. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.